Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 70 of the Uncovered podcast. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter, and with me is Jared Kimber, who you can find absolutely everywhere. Not much to talk about on Uncovered this week, Jared. Of course, we've rebranded it as the Cricket Current Affairs Show. But one really interesting thing that came up out of that test match in which India just beat England in Vizag was that after Mohammad Hafeez took a dig at technology in that recent Australia-Pakistan series, this time it's Ben Stokes versus technology. He didn't quite agree with Zach Crawley's dismissal, which, you know, DRS determined it was an LBW shout. And it has made headlines, which is weird.
Tell me all about, I'm learning about this because you got to remember that I spent about 16 hours working today. And so by the time Ben Stokes started talking, I was doing 8 other things. So I'm going to hear about this live. Tell me, take me through every moment.
So the dismissal that Zach Crawley, you know, ultimately that got him, I think that Ben Stokes felt that it was just hitting. It wasn't supposed to hit based on the trajectory of the ball. But we've heard this story before, right? We heard it back when Syed Ajmal got Sachin in the 2011 World Cup. And I'm not sure, like, you tell me about Hawkeye. How do these things even happen? And why is Stokes so skeptical?
Okay, I think there's a big issue here. And I'm reticent about telling people because if I start betting on cricket, it might be something I bet on, which is when we see the first replay, right, that close-up replay, and we're looking to see if the batter has hit the ball or not, people make most of their decisions on the LBW based on that replay, right? I don't know how many people know this. That camera is not deadly straight. It's an angled camera. It's usually slightly to the left of the pitch or slightly to the right of the pitch, as they have other cameras. They're the ones that are straight on. And my theory is that more often than not, and I've been watching the betting markets with this background, and that was a perfect example of, I thought that was out straight away. When I saw that replay and I realized which side the camera was from, I was like, oh, everyone's going to think this is not out, but this is out. And I looked at the betting markets and that's exactly, the money started coming in live on the trading markets, right, for not out, essentially. And I was like, no, this is going to be out. So I think that is an issue that sometimes confuses people a little bit. And so that is the first sort of close up that we get to see what is happening. I think that is a reason. Essentially, it's almost like priming you. So by the time you've seen the Hawkeye, you've already decided the ball is probably coming down towards the leg stump. To be honest, I thought there was nothing wrong with that decision. But yeah. I'm not primed the way that other people are for that particular thing. And I think most of the issues that come when people go, oh, Hawkeye can't be right here, it's because they don't realize they've just seen a camera that's not straight in front. So I do think that plays a big part. Look, as far as Hawkeye goes, it's not 100%. Hawkeye, I've never said it's 100%. It is a predictive system. If we could predict the future, if Hawkeye could predict the future, they sure as shit wouldn't be helping cricket teams. Right? Like, they'd be doing something else. They'd be playing the stock market. They'd be, you know, Biff in Back to the Future too, right? I'm glad you got that reference, like everyone else.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Else is like, what the fuck's he talking? We're very old, Behram.
Really, I would be hard-pressed to think that not a lot. Like, the majority of our viewers definitely have had to watch Back to the Future. I'm not from that era. I've watched it, right?
Yeah. Well, you're still old. But you're older than perhaps. But so, there is an element of that, but I have absolutely no issue with I thought it pitched in line. I thought it hit him pretty much in front. It was always going to be, was it clipping? Was it taking enough of the stump? You know, what part of it was hitting? There is a predictive part. Our players don't understand this. Obviously, me and Kartikeya have done a podcast about this before. There was another one. I want to say it was the Joe Root LBW where I thought the Hawkeye attendant was really accurate at what frame they used for when the ball hit the pad, which meant that it probably saved Joe Root. If there was some frames missing or the Hawkeye person got it wrong by a single frame, I think Joe Root would have been given out LBW to Akshar Patel, right? That is what happens. Do you remember the one in the World Cup where they missed it? The Hawkeye attendant missed it by a single frame and it went from missing the stumps to hitting the stumps. That is what we are talking about. It is not that hard to get this wrong. But can I tell you this? If we didn't have it, Ben Stokes, you get a lot more worse decisions going on, and the umpires wouldn't be able to self-correct themselves as much as well. And so how is that a better situation? Maybe he should learn how to use DRS better, yeah, rather than just him and Rohit Sharma. There's some Rohit Sharma's theory in DRS is literally, it has 14 seconds gone, I should take it. Right? And Ben Stokes is just like, guys, we want this, right? We want this.
Yeah, it's interesting. I see someone in the comments has mentioned that all three stumps were visible. They weren't. Two stumps were visible, and the third stump had Crawley's leg ahead of it. That's at least the dismissal that I saw. And I mean, just to clarify, Ben Stokes didn't say that this is the reason England lost the test. He just said that technology is not 100%, and I believe that it was wrong on this occasion. But for him to go out of his way and talk about this, that's what was a bit strange in the first place for me.
Yeah, I mean, he said, I don't think it's unfair for someone to say that technology has got it wrong on this occasion.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that phrasing. I think he's wrong, though. I don't think it's unfair for me to say that Ben Stokes has got it wrong on this occasion. I had absolutely, I was commentating on an English radio station, and until you mentioned this, we all thought that was out. I don't remember there being a big discussion amongst us saying that we thought that was not out, right? And, you know, you've got former England players commentating and, you know, I don't really understand it. But the truth is that small mistakes happen with DRS all the time in the way that mistakes happen with umpires and batters and bowlers and fielders all the time. If you want a perfect system, okay, let's invest $20 billion in technology to make sure that every single decision on a cricket field is made correctly. It ain't going to happen, right? So let's just accept that sometimes the marginal ones will go against you. The issue with England was not one LBW of Zach Crawley, although, you know, obviously played a big part. How about the fact that Ben Stokes didn't fucking run for his run out, and that's why he was out, right? How about running hard when the ball's in the infield going to the right hand of a fielder? That's a bigger mistake. That is a far bigger mistake than this LBW DRS situation. I want to ask you something, just because I don't really understand it, and I know we don't have as much news this week, so I figure we might as well talk me through. I'm already, you know, worried that this is going to go massively out of control. But kind of talk me through Imran Khan and what this means and how serious it is and everything else.
It's a tricky one. You've put me on the spot over here, and it's not something that you can talk about very freely in Pakistan. So I'll try to, you know, vaguely cover this as quickly as I can.
What I'm asking is, from a cricket perspective, not from a cricket perspective. I don't think he's about to make a comeback.
Yeah.
But what I'm asking is this one of those occasions where sometimes people get charged with things and they get found guilty of them, and then, you know, a couple of months later, it all disappears and it was just a political thing? Or is this more serious and, you know, it's going to linger one way or another? Like, where are we going with this?
So basically, Imran, his stint as prime minister was very polarizing. A lot of people were diehard fans, blind supporters, even, you could say. And you can expect that with Imran Khan. And we've done an entire fan club episode on Babar Azam, right? It's not too dissimilar. Yeah. Maybe.
Perhaps he was that, like that times 100, right? Like,
exactly. That times 200.
I mean, you know, the impact that, I mean, and Imran Khan wasn't just, like, Imran Khan had fanboys in Australia and England, right? Like, he was a proper jet-setting professional playboy legend cricketer, right? Like, really on a different level, wasn't he?
He still is the prince of Pakistan. Pakistanis take great pride in Imran's, but during his political reign as a prime minister in particular, he did polarize opinion. I have been a critic too at times, but it's not like Pakistan have amazing options everywhere that you'd say, like, oh, not Imran, I want that guy. There is no that guy. So whilst I do believe that Imran made some mistakes in his time, he pandered to some religious outfits. It's not something that I'm a fan of. But what's happening right now is basically just a witch hunt, because it's all political. And they're basically doing this because they want to completely shatter him. And it's all blatantly obvious. And it's sad because, you know, this is someone, for all his ills or whatever, he gave you a cancer hospital, right? And he's been that philanthropist, and he didn't really have anything to gain monetarily from this. Whatever his vision may be, you could agree or disagree, he did care for the country. That much, I suppose, we can all agree on. And it's just, we're at a point where the state is against him, which includes the main players and all the political parties. And I cannot name the main players. That's where we stand right now. And That's basically it. So I don't see this ending until Imran makes some sort of deal behind the door.
So that's I suppose that's one of the things I was wondering about, whether, you know, we get to a point where it's one of those things where it's the biggest deal in the world. And then you find out that it's just like, if you agree never to run for office again, we will drop absolutely everything.
Something like that. But you know Imran, you know he's not going to make that deal, is he?
He's probably not going to make that deal. So there's two other interesting things that happened this week. Were you following the Yorkshire cricket situation?
A little bit.
So Colin Graves, who basically called the racism a bit of banter. I don't know if that's a direct quote, but that's kind of the vibes that he was given. He's been voted back in as the chair of Yorkshire cricket, where he got 88% of the vote. And it's worth noting that I think they really had, that the members had a really interesting question, because I do think there are some members who probably voted for him despite the fact that they find him abhorrent, just because the club is going to be bankrupt. And so they're voting for someone that, and I would, you know, without going and talking to people in Yorkshire, but I've got obviously got friends up there. I know people who kind of said the choice is between having someone who we don't particularly like, but still having a club and not having a club. And the other option is that I think if Graves didn't come in, Yorkshire probably would have had to sell to overseas interests, which is a really fascinating twist. You start with probably the most famous county team, but it was going through financial problems already. You throw in the whole racism thing and how that has changed their dynamic as an organization, you know, from top to bottom. Then you've got Colin Graves, who, you know, wasn't even before the banter comment, not always the most popular person with some of the things he did as ECB chair and everything else. It's a fascinatingly weird situation when you consider that there are certainly Indian interests, and I don't know if there's interest from outside of India, but certainly Indian interests are looking at buying county teams. You know, we know that the Hampshire one is a possibility. They've made calls about other teams as well. Like there's a genuine movement towards this. So I thought that was fascinating. And the other one was, and I'll ask your opinion on this, because we did an episode on Meg Lanning recently. Did you see Meg Lanning's comments?
No, I did not.
So Meg Lanning said, she said, either play more test cricket or don't play it at all.
Wow.
I wonder. And I remember having this conversation when we were doing Death of a Gentleman, because occasionally we'd be asked about women's test cricket. And our answer was pretty standard. Well, we can't fix men's test cricket. How on earth do we think we're going to fix women's test cricket, right? Like, and at that stage, when we were making that, around 2012, 2015, that sort of period, the women's white ball cricket was kind of, what we see now was taking off at that point. I don't think we knew it was going to be this big or anything. But when I was asked about it, I'd be like, if you're asking me, I would say, let's go with the thing that's working at the moment and push all our chips in. But, you know, I would like to see women's test cricket, and I would like to see it thrive. And I love test cricket. And, you know, I love the way that women play ODI cricket and T20 cricket. And I feel like I almost don't know how they play test cricket. So I would love to see that kind of variation on it as well. But Meg Lanning's right. Like, I don't think you can have three formats of women's cricket. Mm-hmm. I just don't think if Susie Bates has never played a test match, can we really say that women's test cricket exists? Like, if we're being serious.
It's not the
serious,
pinnacle, right? Is it? It's definitely not the pinnacle because of a low sample size.
Did Sana Mir play test cricket?
Probably a few games, I'm guessing.
Would she? I'm trying to think of how old she is. If she would have played against Ireland, never played a test either. That's two defining players, right, of women's cricket, and neither of them played a test match. I would argue that women's test cricket doesn't exist at that point. And do you know, I don't know if you knew this, but I didn't know that Pakistan and Ireland had played a women's test until I got to Ireland for the men's test. I just never had heard that story before. I get Meg Lanning, and I think me and Meg Lanning would probably be on the same side of this. If we actually would prefer there to be women's test cricket, but if you're not going to do it properly, like having one test against, like India did great playing two tests back to back, but against two different teams, wouldn't it be great if it was, if they started playing two tests and three tests, you know, even if it's just the major teams, we'd still say it's unsustainable, but I think it would be a fantastic thing. But I can't see the smaller nations getting behind women's test cricket.
Remember that cricket is a funny game. 100 years before we protected our heads, players looked after their groins. So don't be as stupid as old cricketers and protect your computer today. NordVPN is the protection I use when facing cyber shortfalls or when rights issues try to dismiss me. NordVPN will help you get through the straight bat of any geo blocks so you can watch all the cricket you want. If you need your pitch changed, well, NordVPN can doctor any surface to a new location so that your IP address is set up for you to win. Want to buy an associate cricket shirt from a place that won't ship to your country? Select NordVPN. Want to watch a game on a free stream in another hemisphere? NordVPN. Or if you just want to watch a clip on social media that a cricket board won't allow you to, promote NordVPN to pinch it for you. So if you need a VPN, go Nord. Use nordvpn.com/Kimber to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan, plus 4 additional months for free. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the show notes. Protect your computer like a cricketer protects its nether region with NordVPN today.
I can't either. I mean, I can speak for Pakistan, we barely see them get behind women's cricket per se, you know, Period. So when it comes to test cricket, that's even a different conversation. But I do think that there's enough interest now in India for them to at least have 2 to 3 test match series with other nations.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So there is a market over there. And I see on Twitter all the time, so many of my Indian followers and people who I follow are literally just constantly talking about Indians women's cricket. It is the same in Pakistan. Unfortunately, the board doesn't really back it. But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting time that we live in. And I think Meg Lanning, maybe now she feels more empowered to make that comment now that she's retired, right?
Playing more shots than she did when she was on the field. Although she played a lot of shots when she was on the field.
Yeah.
The only other interesting thing I saw in the cricket news this week was the Mitch Marsh, getting the Alan Border medal. I think Alan Border medal is a fascinating thing. So it's basically ripping off the idea of Australian rules football and rugby league, who both have similar kinds of nights. And the Australian cricketers essentially wanted to dress up and go to an event that was in their honour and, you know, take wives and girlfriends and partners and all those sorts of things. And now it's for husbands and boyfriends as well, you know, that cricket is developing at the rate that it is. But it's a fascinating little event. But Mitch Marsh, did you see his speech?
Oh, I loved it. I mean, first, he chokes up while acknowledging, you know, Patty and Ronnie, of course, as captain and coach, because they had all of that faith in him. And, you know, it makes sense. This is a guy who was constantly trolled online and someone who received a lot of hate from the Australian public. And then he literally turned his story around ever since that Ashes test. And Pakistan helped him, I'd say that for sure, by dropping
Pakistan
all
and guys. England, right? Pakistan and England pretty much built his career. They were the only two teams he ever seemed to do anything against. Yeah, so they should get a chunk of that medal. Look, I don't know Mitch Marsh very well, but back when he was active on Twitter, you know, we would chat quite a bit, sometimes publicly, but you know, a lot privately occasionally as well. He's an incredibly honest person. And probably not built for social media, as you can see in that speech. But, you know, we've seen players win awards before and get emotional. And, you know, sometimes it's part of they think that they should feel like that. And I'm not having a go. Like, it's a weird – I would feel weird if I won an award and was in a similar kind of situation. Every time I've won an award, I've actually never been there to pick it up. So I don't know how I would react, if we're being honest. But Mitch Marsh is just he is what he is. I think it was just a beautiful moment to watch him open up like that. And as you said, you know, it's not quite like being a Pakistani or an Indian player, the level of hate. But the Australian public, when they turn on you, they're not quiet about it. It's quite a public turning. It's less social media and a little bit more walking past you at the airport going, hey, but how about some rounds, mate? Right? Like, you know, it's a little bit more in your face when the Australian fans turn on you. And they don't turn on many players, but they certainly had issues with Mitch Marsh for a long time. And this is the player that he's supposed to be, right? And you and I talk about this all the time. All-rounders, it takes a long time to develop. And sometimes, he's now a better... I remember writing about this years ago about him and Ben Stokes. Of Ben Stokes was on the path to greatness and Mitch Marsh was on the path to kind of, you know, being abused essentially. he's now probably a better player than Ben Stokes. Obviously, Ben Stokes has the captaincy, so it's a little bit different there. But Ben Stokes can't bowl anymore. And Mitch Marsh is probably
overall utility.
Yeah, yeah. Like, so what a comeback that is. Because I tell you what, I think I must have written about them both in 2015. And at that stage, you would have had long odds on Mitch Marsh ever being more use on a cricket field than Ben Stokes. Yeah.
I mean, it's been a phenomenal turnaround. And of course, there was that part of the speech where he choked up, but also he had that slapstick humor that he's known for, where he goes like, you know, I'm a bit fat sometimes and I love a beer. That's basically Mitch Marsh for me. I don't know if you've watched the test on Amazon or not, but there are these times where Mitch Marsh is just being a goof in that dressing room and everyone's feeding off of that energy.
Now he said this. I don't know if I've ever actually said this publicly, but when he was at the academy, the running joke was when the players would turn up in the morning to bat, bowl, field, doing whatever they're doing, Mitch Marsh would always be running laps. And that's because he always got caught getting drunk. And he did have an alcohol problem, right? Him and his brother, I think. Luke Pommisbatch, they had a really bad atmosphere in Western Australian cricket for a while. But the running joke was that they would just run Mitch Marsh around the field until he basically almost vomited out the alcohol from the night before. And I remember telling this story to, I was on the Caribbean radio station once. It might've been a Jamaican station. And they were going on about West Indian fitness standards, blah, blah, blah. And you never see Australians unfit. And I was like, let me tell you a story about Mitch Marsh, right? And the reason that Mitch Marsh can do what he can is the professional structure around him, right? Mm. There were people there to hold him accountable. And, you know, he's a proper athlete. Like, he could have played Aussie rules football. I don't know if he would have been great at it, but he certainly would have played. He certainly would have played at the top level. That was the level he was going for. You know, just an incredible athlete from that point of view. And just a natural entertainer, as you said, kind of just an unguarded person. I think he left Twitter because Cricket Australia said, Mitch, we can't be involved with this anymore. Because I remember him and Alex Hales were loose as fuck on Twitter in the early days. I could tell you that.
I mean, I saw a Ben Duckett tweet very recently from 2013, and I can describe that as loose as well. I'm not sure if you came across this or not.
I haven't seen that one.
Basically, he was describing MS Dhoni's wife/girlfriend. So, yeah.
I think there's some Mitch Marsh.
Good luck getting a Chennai Super Kings contract.
Yeah, I think there's some Mitch Marsh ones that might be along similar veins, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, he is that sort of character, but also I've seen him play with a lot of freedom now. It seems like he has a clear head, and that's something that Pat Cummins has really achieved with his team. He's given his players that space to express themselves. Travis Head is another example.
I was about to say, isn't it incredible that they tried to harness Glenn Maxwell for years, and Pat Cummins, all the talk of Pat Cummins being woke and not being an alpha male and all this sort of stuff, he's letting these guys be themselves, which is dominant friggin' hitters of cricket balls. And the old alpha male masculine guys were like, no, tone it down. Oh, geez, Maxi, you're training weird in the nets, mate. We can't have you training weird in the nets. And with Mitch, it's like, I don't know, just go out and bash it and we'll see how you go. Do you want a second gully in and we'll see if we can get a wicket?
Yeah, and I truly think that Pat Cummins' captaincy and leadership is that catalyst that has kind of allowed these players to go and be themselves. Usman Khawaja is another, you know, whether it be on the field or off the field. Did you catch that moment from the awards where his wife described his spirit animal as a sloth? And Usman Khawaja really took that personally. He did not like that comment. He kept justifying how he's not a sloth. That was funny. But yeah, that guy in the comment section who kept telling us that it's the year of the tiger or the year of the dog. It's the year of the bison. That's what it is. It's the year of Mitch Marsh. But anyway, I just also want to add a bit on the previous conversation. The reason I was so reserved talking about it is because there have been instances of people who've actually been taken away from their homes. So if you don't see me anymore, it's Jared's fault.
I don't pay you enough to be kidnapped, man. So, do I have to pay a ransom? Would it be, or would it be just you disappear and we never see you again? Because
I would have to make some sort of deal. I'm guessing of never.
Of course you would. Again. No, yeah, if that happens, we'll just do a podcast about your deal and about and it'll be fine. Yeah.
Getting a deal out of Imran.
I've noticed a lot of people in cricket are not talking about it, and I understand why it's tricky for you guys. And you know, I've been in trouble with some politicians before in those parts of the world. And I do understand all those sorts of things. But it's just from the outside, it's just so hard to know, because especially with Pakistan, so much of the media is biased one side or the other. And it's like, sometimes you just want to know roughly what we expect this to be. Is this, the worst thing that's ever going to happen, or is it going to move on?
I'll give you a quick briefing again on that, is that we have elections in 2 days, okay? Day after tomorrow, we have elections in this country. And it's not a level playing field because Imran's party has been disbanded. They don't have a sign anymore. So each of those guys is, standing in the elections as independents. So I'm not sure how that'll fare. But generally what I've noticed in life is that when you do this sort of thing to a party, you only rile up everyone and they end up voting for them. So I will not be surprised if Imran, comes back. Oh, hello.
You know, this is live.
I don't care.
People are now seeing you around the world wondering why you're wearing a Minecraft onesie. Borrow my iPad and get out. Shut the door. Stop talking.
Go watch Bluey.
So you're in the middle of this great... That's the last thing you'll ever say on this podcast, because you'll be taken away and it's been completely ruined by my son.
Yeah, but I will not be surprised, because look, I was an Imran Khan critic when he was in government. Not that I hated him, but I would not just worship him as some sort of messiah. I've come to that point where I'm like, okay, this is just unjust. It's a witch hunt and screw you guys. You know, that's where we're at. And I'm sure a lot of people
vote Bayram.
The same
2024.
Way.
Are you on the ballot?
And I'm not. I will never go into politics. But if I survive this week, of course, after having said so much, maybe I'll be nicked. But yeah, it's quite dangerous. That's why people refrain from talking.
No, about it makes sense.
Yeah. Here's to hoping that there's some light at the end of this tunnel. Maybe Imran has a Mandela-esque arc. Who knows? He is 70-something, so I don't know if that's even possible. One last thing that we do need to talk about, and I really want to talk about this, is that, there's a lot of conversation on the surfaces in India, and we've also mentioned this in podcasts prior. There have been really sporting pitches thus far that we've seen in this series, right? Both Hyderabad and Vishakhapatnam. We saw that there was something for the seamers, something for the spinners. If you apply yourselves as batters, you're going to get runs. And I, in the Pro Sports podcast that I do in Urdu, I mentioned that point that we discussed about how Indian batters might not develop on those extremely spin-friendly wickets. And even though they've had success abroad, that is a crop of batters that did well on different kinds of pitches. And then they came up trumps in Australia and England and all of those nations. But when you have those extremely, those rank turners, dust bowls, maybe your own batters won't develop as well. Now we've seen good pitches. We've seen batters throwing away their wickets. So there is some merit in that conversation. And Sourav Ganguly tweeted that he's really happy with these pitches because he thinks that India have the pace bowling attack to thrive on any sort of surface. And again, he made the point of, this will allow batters to develop better. So yeah, I mean, we've really come full circle, and I love the work the curators have done thus far.
Two brilliant pitches. Absolutely fantastic pitches. India had the team to win kind of on any surface, and they're still Indian wickets, right? Like, spinners weren't taken out of the game. Tom Hartley took a bunch of wickets in one of those games, right? So there's no lack of advantage, but those are the kinds of wickets that, and it's still a developing science / art, right? But those are the kinds of wickets we want all around the world, where the spinners have a go, the seamers have a go, the batters have a go. Not one lot of cricketers dominate the game, right? The three major parts all play, all do that. You could play your shots, you can defend solidly, you can bowl pace, you can, swing the ball, maybe even seam the ball a little bit. You can spin it, you can get some bounce off your spin. Okay, it will break up later, so the balls keep low. That, for me, is kind of what a test match wicket should be. And we saw essentially two of them. So, they've been fantastic wickets. And I think in the last few years, wickets have actually been a lot better. I think we are learning a lot more on how to do things. And there are some wickets that are always going to be one-dimensional, right? There's not much you can do about those sorts of wickets. But we are learning about what makes a better wicket. And hopefully with Hawkeye data, we've just got no excuses anymore to be in the dark age, right? We can have a look at this wicket and go, okay, what went wrong? Go back to the ground staff and say to them, what do you think went wrong or right here? Or how do you think you can replicate this next time? Or what tweaks would you make, having seen, and show the data. That's the future of cricket. That's what it should be. even in the 80s and 90s, wickets weren't particularly good. And certainly...
I mean, we just saw that surface in South Africa, right? After which Rohit said that, I'm fine with playing on these surfaces, but don't complain when we make them in India. I was expecting dust bowls. So that's the surprising bit.
Thanks to the kind folks at FlexiSpot for looking after my office and my butt by sending me their E7 Pro desk that save your favorite desk heights at a touch of a button. You don't have to crank anything. This thing just finds the height that you like and you can work. And their BS12 Pro chair that supports my posterior while I'm recording, well, this ad and all my shows. If you need great desks, especially ones that change heights or the best quality chairs, head on over to FlexiSpot.
That's the bit that I think this is better for Indian cricket. I think they're still going to dominate. I think they'll still win a lot. And I think it's much better for Indian cricket. I've always said that the spinning wickets sometimes bring about a sense of randomness to the results as well. But, you know, the Pune test and the indoor test are probably a testament to that. But no, absolutely no doubt. I think India is still going to win an absolute truckload of matches. But this was, and I like a good chaotic two-day test where no one can hit the ball occasionally. But these two last two tests have been absolutely fantastic surfaces and really gripping matches where different teams had chances and were on top. And, you know, if Stokes doesn't get run out and bent and you know, Crawley's one did go a millimeter the other way. And, all you know, there's a couple of things. England could have given this a fair run again. So two really gripping, interesting test matches so far. And played on good surfaces. You know, you can't ask for much more than that. I cover a lot of cricket in my life. And like neutral fans, I had an England fan last week go, oh, you're so anti-England. I'm like, mate, if England win a test match when it's when they're touring India and it's the first one of the series, it's literally the best thing that happens to the rest of my month. Because it means that there is a narrative and it's going to take India at least two tests to get back in front of them. So for the first three tests of the series, I've got something to talk about. Right, the worst possible situation is that the home team wins the first one, and this and the away team goes, well, that's us done. We'll see you next time. Right, like that's, you know, for me, it's about the narrative, the you know, the interest. Because if a fan, someone on YouTube here, they might watch tons of cricket. Let me tell you, if that game gets boring, they're not paying a lot of interest. I have to. Right. So it needs to be captivating for me. And I think they've been fantastic early tests.
Oh, I agree 100% with you over there. And that's the thing about pitches, which are, you know, balanced in the sense that they offer everyone a bit of something, because that way the game is, as you mentioned, not one dimensional, which it is on those, you know, 2-day test match surfaces, rank turners, or even like that test match in South Africa. You know, that wasn't a turner. It was uneven bounce and it was, you know, the ball was
that
going
was just
everywhere.
A shit pitch.
Yeah, it was a terrible, terrible pitch. So what this does is it's more captivating. The game ebbs and flows. And like Jared said, that if, you know, the home team loses the first test and the home team is India, then that sets up the entire series. If India win the first test, then our job gets a bit boring, doesn't it? So, would want to see all, you know, five tests have these sort of surfaces. And I think this is a really, this could be a watershed moment in Indian home tests, because they have the quality to be dominant across all sorts of surfaces, really. Mm. Even if you put them on, you know, a green top, you've got Bumrah. He's doing this in Vizag and Hyderabad, you know, 15 wickets in two games.
They won in Australia, right? They should have won in England. If they'd stuck around, I think they would have won that series. And South Africa, we've talked about that before, but realistically, again, probably had the team to win in South Africa. Like, they're just a fantastically rounded side.
I would say that after Australia from, you know, late 90s to mid 2000s, this is probably one of the best test teams we've seen. There's South Africa as well. South Africa won
that
a lot.
South Africa period.
Under,
it was good.
Under
too,
Graham Smith. Yeah. These are the three teams that you think of when you think of dominant sides in test cricket in the recent past. It's a shame that India, or really tragic actually, that India haven't won a test championship yet, because they were the better sides in both of those finals, but were undone by some bad cricket and conditions to a certain extent, I'd say.
Do you know what? I would say that the perfect wicket, although the Southampton wicket, had it have been a drier period, probably would have been a really good wicket as well. But I would almost argue that the wickets we've just played these last two test matches on would almost be the ideal World Test Championship pitches, if you're being honest. Yeah. I mean, you know, it would give the home team, but just from the fact that It doesn't matter what you bring, whether you bring Jimmy Anderson, what kind of batters you bring, you know, whatever. Everyone's got a chance in a test like that.
Yeah. Anyway, I think that, Rob, pretty much ends all the current affairs news. So that'll be the end of this Uncovered podcast. Might be my last Uncovered podcast, guys. So in that case, goodbye. Hopefully that's not going to happen, though. But yeah, thanks for coming
in. We'll see.
Yeah, thanks for all the comments, guys. Sunkulp says it was the best Uncovered for me so far. Yeah, really, really.
But was it the best overthrows?
Yeah. Was it the best overthrows or not? It was only the second overthrows, but anyway, maybe, yeah, he was there from the start. He's seen both of them. He's been with us for 2 hours. Anyway, that's it for this week. Stay with us. Well, don't stay with us, but be back with us next week for another episode of both Uncovered and Overthrows. That'll be all for today. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku, as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recording. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. Tired of editing your podcasts and videos because you are as lazy as me? Well, try using Memento FM, an AI-based service that cuts and dices so all you have to do is hit post. Try Memento FM today.